Welcome to Torah Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Aleph, Perek Tet. After Shlomo's Tfilah to Hashem in the last Perek, as part of the dedication ceremony for the Beit HaMikdash, Hashem responds to Shlomo's Tfilah in this Perek by telling him that he has heard his Tfilot, and that he has sanctified the Beit HaMikdash and will watch over it forever. And this is why even now, a millennium after the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed even, we believe that Hashem still watches over Har HaBayit and the Kotel with an extra kind of hashkacha, with an extra kind of providence. Hashem then continues that as long as Shlomo follows the Torah and doesn't worship Avodah Zarah, then David's dynasty will continue forever. But warns that if he doesn't, then Bnei Yisrael will be sent into Galut, into exile, and the Beit HaMikdash will be destroyed, and both will become mockeries for the other nations. Unfortunately, we see this promise fulfilled in Megillat Eicha, where Yirmiyahu describes Yerushalayim's becoming a laughingstock among her enemies. In Eicha, Perek Aleph Pasuk Zayin, Yirmiyahu tells us, Ra'u ha-tsarim sachaku al mishpateha. Her enemies saw her and laughed at her desolation. And in the next Perek in Eicha, Perek Bet Pasuk Tet Vav, we're told, Safku alayach kapayim, kol ovrei derech sarku, vayaniyu rosham al bat Yerushalayim. All who passed clapped their hands and whistled and shook their heads upon seeing Yerushalayim destroyed. As you may recall from our discussion last Perek, this is not what Shlomo had originally assumed in Perechet. Rather, he had presumed that even if Bnei Yisrael would be punished and sent into Galut, into exile, the way that the Torah had promised, he assumed that the Beit HaMikdash would remain standing, and that Bnei Yisrael would face in its direction when they davened from their foreign country of exile. The Abarbanel explains that here Hashem was warning Shlomo, even though you built this Mikdash with the physical sturdiness and strength to last forever, don't think that's a definite. Its survival is dependent on your keeping the Torah and upon those kings who follow after you as well. In Psukim Yithri Yud Aleph, we're told that for the 20 years it took Shlomo to build the Beit HaMikdash and his royal palace, 7 years for the Beit HaMikdash, 13 for his palace, Hiram Melech Tzor had supported these building projects by providing him with all the trees and gold he needed. Whereas in Perek Hey we're told that Shlomo repaid Hiram with produce, here in Perek Tet we're told that Shlomo repaid him with 20 cities in the Galil. Why did Shlomo change his payment to Hiram? Why didn't he continue to pay him with produce? Was this switch of payment to cities a step up from the produce, or was it considered a step down? In order to answer this question, we really have to take a look at Hiram's response to these cities. And we're told, in fact, that he did not like them, and he even asked Shlomo why he had given them to him. Why was Hiram so dissatisfied? The Psukim themselves don't tell us, but Rashi and Radak suggest that it was because these cities were made up of sand instead of soil, and so they weren't good for agriculture. This is set up in very stark contrast to the agricultural produce that Shlomo had originally paid Hiram with. Not only did Shlomo no longer reimburse Hiram in the form of produce, but he now gave him land that couldn't even eventually yield produce either. Obviously, this new form of reimbursement for Hiram's provisions was a step down from their original agreement. This seems to be an indication that after the building of the Beit HaMikdash, things weren't not going as well for Shlomo's empire economically as they had been in the past. But why the sudden change? It seems that originally most of Bnei Yisrael were farmers, and they were very successful agriculturally, and they consumed modestly, which led to a surplus with which Shlomo could pay Hiram. However, it appears from a little later in this parak, in Pasul Chafbet, that with the success of the empire, Bnei Yisrael had largely stopped working in agriculture and manual labor, and instead became involved in higher level pursuits, such as commerce and trade and the military. They had also become accustomed to opulence and luxury, consuming a lot more than they had originally. And this combination of fewer farmers and greater consumption led to a deficit. Therefore, Shlomo could no longer supply Hiram with surplus produce because he no longer had any, and instead he had to resort to giving away cities of Eretz Yisrael itself, which is a pretty clear indication that perhaps things now are not as ideal economically as they seem to have been in Prakim Gimel through Hay. However, Shlomo did still benefit economically from certain relationships that he had developed with foreign leaders. In addition to the wood and gold provided by Hiram Melech Tzor, Shlomo gained the following from their relationship. In Pasuk Yedalad, we're told that Hiram paid Shlomo tax money in gold as part of a tax that Shlomo had passed upon all countries within his jurisdiction in order to finance all of his building projects. And in Pasuk Chaf Zayin, we're told that when Shlomo built boats in the port of Etzion Gaver on the Yamsuf, which is today's Eilat, Hiram sent his sailors along with Shlomo's to teach them the ways of traveling the seas. When they returned from their sea journey, they brought Shlomo back a lot of gold and other forms of wealth that they had found. And in fact, this is very similar to what Shlomo had done with Hiram's woodchoppers. He wasn't content with hiring them. He also wanted them to teach Bnei Yisrael how to do it. As we already discussed, Ezehu Chacham Halomin Mikol Adam. Shlomo made sure to glean all different types of wisdom from everyone he could, and that's the mark of a truly wise person. Shlomo also benefited from his relationship with Paro Melech Mitzrayim. In Psukim Tet Zayin through Yud Zayin, we're told that Paro captured Gezer, which was a city which he burned down and killed all of its Canaanite inhabitants. And he gave this city to Shlomo as a dowry for his daughter, because Shlomo had married Bat Paro. And Shlomo then proceeded to build it up again along with its environs. As if Shlomo's building projects so far haven't been enough, we're told in Pasuk Chaf Dalet that towards the end of this parak, that Shlomo built Bat Paro a palace. We're told that Bat Paro used to live in Ir David, and that now Shlomo built her a new palace in another area of Yerushalayim called the Milo. According to Divrei HaYamim Bet, Perek Chet Pasuk Yud Aleph, the reason why Shlomo moved Bat Paro out of Ir David was because Ir David was Kadosh. And Ir David was considered Kadosh, holy, since the Aron had been housed there during the time of David. And he didn't think that Bat Paro belonged there because she was not Kadosh. She was not holy. And this is yet another indication that Shlomo's kingdom was not run in the ideal way. What was he doing marrying a woman whom he knew was not Kadosh? The next question that I'd like to discuss is, why did Shlomo choose to build Bat Paro's palace specifically in the Milo? And in order to understand Shlomo's choice and its implications here, we have to figure out what the Milo area had originally been used for before Shlomo had built Bat Paro's palace there. All seem to agree that it had been an expansive open area in Yerushalayim near the king's palace. What Parshanim disagree on is what this area had been used for. The Mitzudat David tells us that David HaMelech intentionally left the Milo open so that people of Bnei Yisrael, the people, could easily come to him to hear their court cases. Shlomo closed up this open area as if he didn't care about hearing the people's court cases anymore. Rashi tells us that David HaMelech had left the Milo open so that the members of Bnei Yisrael coming to Yerushalayim for Aliyah LeRegel, for the Beit HaMikdash 3 times a year, could pitch their tents there for the duration of Yom Tov. When Shlomo built a palace there, he essentially made it harder for Bnei Yisrael to fulfill the mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel, of coming to his own Beit HaMikdash, the Beit HaMikdash that he himself built. So according to both Mitzudat David and Rashi, by building up the Milo, Shlomo had corrupted an important ideal or value in his kingdom. The difference between them is which ideal it was, which value it was that he corrupted. The Mitzudat David claims that Shlomo corrupted the democratic ideal of the people having open access to their king. In Perek Gimel, Shlomo personified this ideal when he heard the court case of the two zonot, the two prostitutes, demonstrating that anyone of any social stature could gain an audience with the king. He had personified the ideal king of Tzedek U'Mishpat, but now it seems that he has corrupted that democratic ideal and put his own needs or his wife's needs before his people's needs. According to Rashi, Shlomo corrupted the religious spiritual ideal of serving Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash during Aliyah LeRegel. Right? As we noted, Shlomo himself had built the Beit HaMikdash, and then he blocked Bnei Yisrael's ease of accessing it. What's common to both of these opinions is that Shlomo appropriated public land that had been used for the benefit of the people, providing them with ease of access to something extremely important, and instead designated it as royal land to be built up into a palace for his foreign wife. It seems that Shlomo's reign was beginning to move away from a focus on the people's needs and towards a focus on his own personal needs. Understanding this change is going to be important in helping us comprehend the people's ultimate rebellion against Shlomo's kingdom during his son Rechavam's reign. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.